Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 18th of January, 2016, the podcast that tickles the ebonies. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again is Chris Hangartner. Chris, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back, and happy 2016.
Let's hope it is. Let's equiponderate the news of the bogus. So we followed the kangaroo court that was the Ross Ulbricht trial, and unsurprisingly, Ulbricht is appealing. His defense filed a 145-page argument for a new trial, calling for a court to throw out his conviction on all seven charges, including narcotics trafficking, money laundering, and computer hacking, as well as the kingpin charge, which basically said he was a mafia boss and drug cartel leader. Just ridiculous stuff they were throwing in.
Oh, this is the Silk Road case.
Yeah.
Still talking about that? I mean, come on, all the evidence shows that guy was innocent, so...
Well, that's why they're trying to get the convictions thrown out.
Yeah.
And they point out all sorts of improprieties and abuses in the investigation at trial. And they claimed that the court was erroneous when they suppressed information about the federal agents stealing the bitcoins and trying to extort money from Ulbricht and things like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, some people are using the Silk Road case as an argument against Bitcoin, too.
Well, I think next week we might have a few things to say about Bitcoin, because some not very good things are happening there, but that'll... we'll talk about it then. But for this week, we have Ulbricht's defense pointing out the crimes of Karl Marx Force IV, which weren't even revealed to the defense until after the trial, and also Secret Service agent Sean Bridges weren't disclosed to the defense at all until they were unsealed months after Ulbricht's conviction. And Ulbricht's lead attorney, Joshua Drittel, said, quote, "To a significant degree, the extent and in some respects the nature of Force's misconduct, as well as Bridges' participation altogether, was hidden by the government from the defense and the court in this case until after trial. Contrary to the government's claims in the court's decision, the evidence of Force's and Bridges' corruption was both material and exculpatory." They also point out that they had asked for a mistrial no less than 5 times over the course of the trial, and of course was denied everyone.
Well, that's the court's tree. The judges are just politicians in robes.
Yep. Judge Forrest also said that Drittel couldn't cross-examine prosecution witnesses about alternative suspects they discussed to be possible owners of the Silk Road or possible users of the Dread Pirate Roberts user. Because remember, they were making it out like Ross Ulbricht and no one else was Dread Pirate Roberts, and he was saying that he was just one of many.
Yeah, it's... prosecutors really do not like cross-examination.
Judge Forrest also refused to admit a statement from a Silk Road staffer who had written that multiple people were running Silk Road under the pseudonym Dread Pirate Roberts, which would have supported his contention. His laptop was searched with an overly broad warrant. His online accounts were tracked with a warrantless pen register, and all of that violated his Fourth Amendment rights. And so all that evidence should be discarded as fruits of a poison tree.
Yep.
They also talk about how the judge blocked 2 expert witnesses Drittel planned to call to the stand, saying they were irrelevant, and said the defense submitted them with too little notice. But these were rebuttal witnesses. For example, you have Andreas Antonopoulos, who's a Bitcoin expert, who was able to poke holes in all sorts of testimony that one of the ex-FBI agents said when he was tracing $13.4 million worth of Bitcoin from Silk Road to Ulbricht's laptop. That wasn't even revealed by the prosecution until mid-trial. And so they had to kind of at the last minute find a witness to counter it. And they tried to put this up as a rebuttal witness and said, sorry, so...
Stuff like this makes me really hate the U.S. court system.
Yeah. They talk about how Force was sentenced to 6.5 years in prison and Bridges just under 6 years when both agents had stolen funds from the site and hijacked the accounts of other staffers. And Force had actually extorted Ulbricht under another pseudonym and threatened him with identification and prosecution. And, under a different pseudonym than that, sold Ulbricht information about law enforcement's investigation into Silk Road.
Didn't the guy in Silk Road, didn't he get like a life in prison, no parole sentence?
Yep, life without parole.
Yeah, meanwhile a guy who killed his wife and her lover, you know, gets 25 years.
Average sentence for murderers is 12.4 months, and most of them serve half that.
Yep.
And the defense also argued that Force and Bridges were in a perfect position to fabricate most of the evidence that they used against Ulbricht. And I mean, really, anyone with a text editor could have done that.
Yeah.
And prior to the conviction, the defense hadn't even been told that Force was working with Bridges. And a forensic expert they consulted said, yeah, it's highly probable that this evidence was faked.
Well, of course, it's very easy to fake evidence.
Well, it's one of those cases that it would be like a one in a zillion chance of these particular logs sticking around after all that time.
Oh, yeah, the prosecution is famous for doing that. You know, there is a little glimmer of evidence, you know, but it's like a one in a billionth chance. So what does the prosecution do? They say, oh, well, we found it. How? That's not relevant.
Yeah, and what was the whole cache of log files and everything that they found it in and all that?
Yeah, there was actually this guy on YouTube I saw who used to be an ex-police officer, but he was doing videos about how to be a good jury, and he says the biggest problem with the U.S. court system is that both the prosecution and defense are allowed to question, you know, well, is this of relevance and all that, you know, and they're forgetting that the jury should be allowed to see everything. He says one way to improve the justice system, especially the criminal justice system, is that whatever the judge knows, the jury has to know.
But that's not the way it works.
Nope, because prosecutions and defense lawyers, they both equally do not want that because it damages their chances of winning and makes them have to work.
Yep, they actually have to prove their case.
Yep. It's funny because they always teach you about how, you know, well, a jury is supposed to be unbiased to the fact, but this guy said that's actually not how it should work. You should be biased when you go into, you should think, okay, I know that this guy, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is innocent, and it's the prosecution's job to say, no, no, he's not innocent, and here's why.
Well, it's, you say I'm going to presume he's innocent.
Yep.
Until proven otherwise.
Yep, that's what I do. I tell people all the time, unless I see some hard evidence, you know, some really solid evidence that this guy is guilty, I'm gonna presume he's innocent. That's why I get so angry when I watch a lot of those, you know, investigative discovery channels about how they sentence a guy, you know, to life in prison based on just one eyewitness testimony.
Yep.
And nothing else.
Yep, an eyewitness that can be mistaken, lying, and
yep,
generally notoriously unreliable.
Eyewitness testimonies, I'm not saying they should automatically throw it out, but, you know, there's got to be meat to their story. You know, if they say something, there needs to be other evidence, you know, to comply with that. And if they don't, well, then you got to bring that into question.
Yeah. So Judge Forrest, in a closed hearing and a sealed statement, said that none of those allegations against Force and Bridges could be used by the defense. Actually, I think it was just Force. I think they didn't even know about Bridges. But her reasoning was that it could prematurely reveal the grand jury investigation. But Dertel says that he moved to delay the trial because it wouldn't have taken long. The grand jury investigation was almost over at the time. Just wait a little more time until it's over and then we can go from there. And Judge Forrest rejected that. And I mean, even if this wasn't an issue of corruption about the case itself, any evidence like that should be able to be used to attack the character of anyone who takes a stand. That's part of what happens as a witness. You know, in cross, they get to attack your character, and if they show you to be dishonest or dishonorable, then that can call your testimony into question.
You know, it's just one of those things, you know, the prosecution's just protecting themselves, they're protecting their reputations.
Yeah, and he also said that Force already knew about the grand jury investigation anyway, quote, contrary to the government's representations to the court, there was not any need to keep the grand jury investigation secret from its target. Force was already fully aware of it, and it was nearly, if not entirely, complete by the time trial in this case began.
Oh, wow. Just...
Now, at the trial, a lot was made of the fact that, oh, this was a separate team up in New York that did all of the stuff completely independent of Force and Bridges, and so that's what was being presented, and so it's not fruits of a poisonous tree. Well, what Dertel says is, quote, the government's repeated insistence that the New York investigation was independent of that in which Force and Bridges were involved is demonstrably repudiated by the record created by the government's investigators and prosecutors themselves. That record establishes that all of the federal investigations of Silk Road were coordinated and, for practical purposes and for determining relevance to this case, combined.
It just baffles me that this whole thing all got started simply because some prosecutors accused Silk Road of some users selling a bit of weed on it, you know?
Yeah, that's all it is.
And it's funny because people like to say, well, he was using it to sell drugs and contract killers. Well, no, that was independent users. And second of all, you can do that on almost any site. I've heard of stories, you know, where drug dealers or contract killers, they flat out, you know, advertise their services on the yellow pages.
Oh, you have prostitutes all over the place on Craigslist. They don't call themselves that, of course, but if you know what to look
for.
Yeah,
they call themselves sex, escorts, you know, erotic masseuses, company.
Happy
you
ending
know.
Massage, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So, of course, Dratel attacks Judge Forrest's sentence of life without parole, saying that it was based in part on testimony about Silk Road buyers who had died from drug overdoses.
Oh, yeah, completely reliable evidence.
Well, and I mean, it's one of those things that even if that's true, how can you blame Ulbricht for it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, if a guy decides to inject, you know, a lethal dose of heroin and cocaine into a system, that's his own responsibility, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like there have been a couple of crimes committed by Uber drivers. You know, they call for an Uber car that comes over there and the driver robs them.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that. There was actually an interesting Reason TV show which did that, you know, where a guy said, you know, who was pro-taxi because he was a big taxi mongrel, said, but what about those stories where the Uber drivers abused, you know, their customers, and then they actually brought in a bunch of newspaper articles showing taxi drivers, and it turns out taxi drivers do it far more often than Uber drivers.
But, I mean, the point is, you know, it's ridiculous to blame Uber for that. Yes, maybe there are things that Uber can do to help mitigate from that, but they're not responsible for it.
That's the biggest thing I hate with this kind of attitude. Like, if some company, you know, messes up, the automatic assumption is, oh, that company needs to go out of business. No, what we should be doing is saying, look, we really like what you guys are doing, but you gotta fire these individuals. Our beef with the police system isn't that we hate police, it's just that they're not punishing the bad apples, and they're letting the entire basket get rotten.
So, one of the things that Forrest said, and we covered this, was how her sentence was actually about making an example of Ulbricht and trying to deter other people from trying the same thing, which you're totally not supposed to do with the court system.
Yeah.
But what Dratel points out is that she made no argument why a shorter sentence wouldn't have accomplished the same goal.
Yeah, you know, it's stupid.
So he says, quote, "The life sentence imposed on 30-year-old Ross Ulbricht shocks the conscience and is therefore substantively unreasonable. Accordingly, Ulbricht should be resentenced before a different judge to avoid the irredeemable taint from the improper factors the court considered."
Well, I hope he succeeds, but sadly, knowing the U.S. court system, the government will find a way to mess that up too.
Well, we can hope. They seem to get it about half right, usually, so.
The federal government can do whatever they want because they have potatoes. You can't argue with potatoes.
Mark Watney agrees. Say, if you're tired of the promos in this podcast, well, the patrons got it early and with no ads or promos. Just go to patreon.bogosity.tv and donate at any level.
Hi, I'm Dave. You may recognize me from previous Bogosity episodes. However, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm also part of a podcast, the Superplex Brothers Podcast. Head on over to superplexbros.com. You can check out the podcast for video games and pro wrestling. We also have news, reviews, and editorials and all kinds of stuff just to talk about video games and pro wrestling and everything else that comes in between. So if you're into that, why don't you come check us out?
So, more GMO bogosity, as the FDA has finally verified the safety and environmental sustainability of genetically modified salmon, and it only took them 20 years to do it.
Yeah, completely ignoring the fact that we've been genetically modifying food long before even Gregor Mendel proposed the idea of genetics.
Yep, before we even understood what was going on. And I mean, really, people talk about, you know, so-called organic farming. You know what a lot of organic farmers do, and this is still fully considered as part of the organic process?
What's that?
They bombard their seeds with radiation and see how they mutate and pick the ones they like from that.
Yeah.
So how is picking the individual genes themselves?
Here's the thing, like, if you were to pick, you know, like, let's say a carrot with a raw, unorganic, altering no influence from any source, here's what's going to happen. You're going to lose half your crop to pests, the other third to disease, and the rest is going to be this brown, squishy carrot. It's edible, but it's brown and squishy because that's what wild carrots look like in the real world.
Now, in this case, what they did was, every animal has growth hormones. You have growth hormones, and that's because of a gene that was turned on for a while, and then it got turned off. When it doesn't, and there's a flaw that makes it stay on, you become like Andre the Giant, who just kept growing and growing and ended up dying early because of it. Well, what they did with these salmon is do that on purpose, kept this gene turned on so that they grow twice as fast as their wild counterparts, and with 75% less feed, lowering the carbon footprint 25 times over and resulting in lower costs for consumers.
Yeah, and organic farmers are accusing GMOs and meat eaters of polluting.
Yeah, and apparently Kroger, Whole Foods, and Trader Joe's have already said, oh, we're not going to carry this product because evil GMOs and people don't like it. Yeah.
Yeah, Whole Foods. I have really mixed opinions about Whole Foods because on one hand, their founder, John Mackey, he's a really cool guy. And, you know, he's a staunch libertarian, but his store is just so expensive to shop at, you know. I mean, South
well,
Park
and being a libertarian far from makes you immune to pseudoscience, unfortunately.
Oh yeah. I mean, even South Park made fun of that, you know, where people only shop at Whole Foods after South Park becomes gentrified and, like, Randy buys, like, a pizza and a few other products and it costs him, like, $40. It's like you could buy, like, a half week supply of food, you know, for half that at Walmart.
I don't know. It's even getting expensive at Walmart.
Well, yeah, but then again,
that's the inflation that we don't have.
That's what happens, people. When you raise the minimum wage and order Walmart, you know, and other places to, you know, higher their standards, someone's got to pay for that.
Yeah, and now Walmart's closing dozens of stores.
Oh, yeah, I heard that over the news. Yeah. You know, Walmart used to be that place where if you're down on your luck or if you're really looking for an entry-level job, Walmart was always open. Now it's reaching the point where now even they're difficult to get into. It's pretty funny because people, you know, ask me, why are you a libertarian? Because you're unemployed and all that. It's like, well, because I can guarantee you that if we had a true free market, it would be 10 times easier for me to find a job, because even if I had no work experience and all that, at least an employer would say, look, we'll give you a little something to do, we'll pay a couple bucks an hour, just see what you can do. That's what they used to do during the old days.
And without taxes and regulations, things would probably cost about a tenth of what they do now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, what happened, people?
So, of course, policymakers, both state and federal, are talking about mandated labeling, and I really like this article for the Foundation for Economic Education from Jared Meyer, pointing out the problems with this. He talks about an ABC poll that says that there's a very slight majority that believe that GMOs are unsafe, even though the scientists, I don't know if you have any expert that says, no, we shouldn't be doing this. You know, you might have a problem with an individual GMO and they say, okay, this is a problem, let's not put that on the market. But if the product hasn't been shown to endanger consumers, then labeling it can only have a chilling effect and only serve to further misinform people.
Yeah, did you know your food contains dihydrogen monoxide, which is very toxic in high doses? It's also used in nuclear power plants, chemicals, and other sorts of bad companies.
And a teaspoon can be fatal.
How can a teaspoon of water be fatal?
If it gets in your lungs, you drown.
Oh,
that's all it takes to drown in your lungs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay, so Meyer talks about Dr. Cindy Tian. She's a professor at the University of Connecticut's Animal Science Department and made the case that any labeling is inevitably going to mislead the general public and cause them to avoid GMO foods without any basis for it whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. Labeling doesn't work, people. In fact, it even works the other way around. You know, I mean, there's a lot of health foods out there that say, you know, this is low in fat. But if you actually take the food and actually examine it, you'll find out that it has far more fat than you think it is.
Oh, God. I was seeing, like, one of those prepackaged flavored popcorn things, and it was saying stuff like, whole grain, yeah, all popcorn is whole grain, that's kind of the idea, yeah. Gluten-free, how would popcorn even have gluten to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
They've just become meaningless buzzwords. So there's a labeling bill put forth by Alaska State Senators Gary Stevens and Kim Elton that seems to be done solely to stigmatize any fish that's not grown in Alaska, and 90% of the wild salmon caught in the United States comes from Alaska. So is it about keeping the public safe, or is it about limiting competition?
It's all about limiting competition. You know, people like to think that the GMO food wars are these evil biotech corporations trumping on the little small farmer, even though almost all organic products are run by big farming corporations.
But Meyer points out that if this salmon can come to market, it'll have lower costs and it'll increase competition among other salmon growers, and that'll make fish more attractive relative to beef and pork. And of course, salmon is more nutritious than beef and pork, so it could lower heart disease and colon cancer rates, and also reducing the environmental costs of meat production.
Oh, but Shane, what about the mercury? That's another chemical that gets a little...
Well, and it's really the deep sea fish you have to worry about, like tuna. These salmon are going to be raised and slaughtered in captivity, there's not going to be any opportunity for any mercury to get in.
People are afraid of chemicals like arsenic and mercury, when the truth is, if you actually break it down to it, those chemicals are everywhere. Same thing with arsenic. You know, arsenic is that really nasty story. We hear those nasty stories about how people used it to poison one another. Well, here's the thing. Arsenic is in almost everything.
Oh, yeah. You've got a little bit of arsenic in your body right now.
Yep. Same thing with cancer. You know, people fail to realize we, oh, in a way, we all have cancer. There's cancer cells in us all the time that are forming.
Yeah, that's been a big problem with, you know, all this, oh, early detection stuff, early detection, let's detect cancer. They were detecting cancers that weren't very likely to actually become malignant, and they were subjecting people to all these unnecessary treatments that were doing more damage to them. So Meyer points out that this would also help the natural wild salmon populations in areas where they're concerned about overfishing, because by making it cheaper, people will turn to this salmon as well, and there won't be as much fishing in the North Atlantic and in rivers that feed into the North Atlantic where they're considered endangered. There won't be as much fishing there, so that should help there. So there is one point of concern with genetically modified salmon. Like I said, this growth hormone staying on means that they live a shorter life. If these salmon were able to escape into the wild and breed with the normal salmon, then that might have the effect of passing on this damaged gene to them and threatening the populations. Well, Aqua Bounty, the company that did this, makes sterile stock that is all female, and they produce all their new eggs in a lab. And forget Jurassic Park. There's not going to be a life will find a way thing. No, there's no biological pathway for that. So even if they were to escape out into the wild, they wouldn't be able to breed with the wild populations. So.
But then, of course, that's torturing wildlife for science and all that.
Yes. So barring any of these setbacks, this should be at the store shelves and at restaurants in about 2 years. It'll actually make up less than a tenth of the amount of salmon we consume every year. So it's just this tiny little introduction that's been shown for 20 years to be completely safe and actually even good for the environment and good for wild salmon populations. So why not? And hopefully the next one won't have to go through 20 years of FDA testing either.
That's one thing that does admire me about GMO foods, is that a lot of them can be very cheap despite the fact that it took millions of dollars of regulation to make them, so...
They had to jump through a lot of hoops, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they do it, you know, whereas organic foods don't have to go through the same thing, and yet they're still expensive, you know.
Scale. Yeah. Organic food doesn't scale.
It's like buying a name brand, you know. Organic has become a brand of its own kind.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now.
So Bernie Sanders has been promising free everything, free college, free healthcare, and so on. Now, thanks to the Wall Street Journal, we know precisely what free means. Free is $18 trillion.
Yeah. I'm sorry, people, but taxing the rich doesn't pay for everything.
$15 trillion of that would actually be for his single-payer healthcare program.
Yeah.
And the rest of that is expanding Social Security, making college tuition free, more roads, more bridges.
I mean, it's only a matter of time before the government starts advocating that college be mandatory.
Yeah.
Which is stupid because, as many people have pointed out, when you do that, takes away the specialty of college, you know.
Oh, it completely devalues it. It's already happening.
Yeah. The reason why college was more valuable was because almost nobody went to college except for, you know, doctors and lawyers and politicians, and that's what made college so special, was because only the people who not just had the money, but they also had the determination, you know, that's what made it unique. But now, because the government's saying everyone needs to go to college, now it's reaching the point where people go to job interviews and they say, I went to college, and the guy says, yeah, big whoop, so do the other 30 interns that are applying for this job.
I have talked to people who do the hiring for electronics firms, and this has been going on for like 20 years or something, they've gotten graduates from NC State, one of the top engineering colleges in the country. And they've made all these good grades and got this impressive thing. And so they hand them a breadboard, some parts, and a schematic and say, wire this up. And they can't do it.
Yeah.
It's just a simple thing and they can't do it.
That's another thing that people fail to realize. You know, politicians are subsidizing college by saying, you gotta go to college. If you don't go to college, you're gonna become a poor beggar. But then there was another program that found out that the overwhelming majority of common jobs, like common middle class jobs, don't really run like a higher education. It would be helpful to go to a tech school, but a 4-year college you don't need to do, you know?
And to pay for it, Sanders is proposing a tax increase that could only bring in $6.5 trillion over 10 years, so not anywhere near enough. And I'll bet you anything, that is not considering the negative economic effects of increased taxation.
Let's say, you know, even if the taxes don't affect people's personal spending life, we've demonstrated this many times, a single-payer system fucks up the whole system, and it makes it more difficult for people to get health care.
Yeah, he would increase federal spending by about a third to $68 trillion over 10 years. And this includes $1 trillion to repair roads, bridges, and airports. Now, I mean, if a bridge needs to be fixed, fix it. But it shouldn't be like a jobs program or something.
Yeah, there's a lot of problems with government construction programs because, like, either the government does it themselves and they do a crappy job, or they hire a company, but they don't punish the company if it does a bad job.
Now, for his Social Security plan, they want Social Security to be stable for the next 75 years.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, but his additional $1.2 trillion in Social Security taxes will only make it solvent for the next 50 years.
Yeah.
Not 75.
I don't think it was Paul Ryan. I think it was someone else. He explained that Social Security could be solvable. We could, like, he said it wouldn't save on Social Security, but he said it would make it more solvent for, you know, like the next century or so. And all we'd have to do was we'd have to lower the benefits, you know, for rich people. We'd have to raise the retirement age, and people yelled at him for that.
I'll say what I've said many times. If your plan to save Social Security does not include means testing, I don't want to hear from you.
Yeah. I guess I'm not 100% against a program that helps poor people, you know, get help. The problem is that, dare I say it, this communistic thinking that everyone needs to get the same thing, and the result is that people who don't need it benefit from it. Yeah, so people, if you think Bernie Sanders is gonna change a thing, make sure you have plenty of cash in your wallet, because he's expensive.
Now you can make Amazon purchases with Bitcoin by going to purse.bogosity.tv. That's P-U-R-S-E. Moreover, most purchases can be made at a discount. Save an average of 20% just by buying from Purse, or get even greater discounts by linking your Amazon wish list. Go to purse.bogosity.tv. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv.
And now it's time to elliptically curve this week's biggest bogon emitter. And this week it's another presidential contender, this time Jeb Bush, who has his wonderful plan to address the problem of cyber attacks.
George Bush's younger brother. Yeah, this is going to be fun.
Now, he's talking a lot about possible attacks that take down things like power grids.
Yeah.
He's not being paranoid.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very real possibility. There's very real concern about this.
Yeah, that's a scary thing about cyber. You know, the video game Watch Dogs was not too inaccurate. A good hacker can, you know, shut down an entire city from his smartphone if he knows what he's doing.
Yep. Power company, water treatment plants, other forms of infrastructure that have gotten wired and online. They're just put online with, I don't even think security is a second thought these days.
Yeah.
And it really should be. But the problem is, he obviously doesn't understand the first thing about how to implement solutions for these, because he says, quote, "Cybersecurity is not solely the responsibility of the federal government, but the next president must harness an array of tools to confront this challenge. Without meaningful presidential leadership, there is little chance the U.S. government, private sector, and international partners will coordinate effectively to secure the internet." Well, you know, we didn't need government to give us HTTPS. which is securing all our bank transactions and everything.
Yeah. Now, I do agree that the U.S. government does need to fix up their security for their military programs, because it's happened over and over again that some teenage college student in Europe or China, you know, hacks into the U.S. Department of Defense HQ, you know, from his apartment, and that's because the U.S. has really crappy security, but...
Well, and we've talked about hacks like, you know, the Office of Personnel Management and the IRS and...
Yeah. The problem is that the government thinks that now they have to secure the entire internet when it's not that. They just got to secure their networks.
Yeah, I mean, let the private sector come up with the solutions for it, and then government should just come up with the standards to implement it for government stuff.
Yeah, you know
but
what I mean?
We don't, it's not like we're sitting here helpless without government.
Yeah.
We're wanting to implement things like strong encryption, and we've got politicians and bureaucrats getting in the way.
Yeah, that's what I hate about politicians when it comes to cybersecurity, because here's the thing. I'm not a computer geek. I barely understand computer stuff, but I know from firsthand that the government isn't going to fix it because, and we've shown this many times before, after, you know, a hacker hacks into the U.S. Department of Justice, the government says, it starts saying, people need to have better security. So finally, some guy, you know, develops a security program that's like 90% unhackable. You know, even the best hackers can't hack into it. But then the government says, oh, that's too secure. Now we can't break in to make sure you're not doing something wrong.
Yep.
And then they demand you create a back door and they have no choice but to comply. And now, you know, your solid security system, it's not solid anymore.
Yeah, and his whole policy seems to be locking the barn door after someone's stolen the horses with no idea who's stolen the horses or where they went.
Yeah.
So what he says is, quote, we must increase the cost to those who are stealing our nation's intellectual capital and personal information, exposing, sanctioning, prosecuting, and in some cases retaliating against these attackers will help deter other would-be attackers. Okay, how are you going to do it?
Yeah.
Someone runs a DDoS attack or runs up some other attack from his botnet. How are you going to figure out who that is?
Yep.
They still haven't figured out who was behind the Sony attack.
One thing I do in my spare time is I discuss story ideas with a friend of mine, and we were coming up with ideas for comic villains, and I thought of one villain, you know, who runs his own little private army and all that, and you know how he actually protects, you know, his secret operations from secrets? He has some computer programming code, but the way that it's almost virtually unhackable, at least by our standards, is because he actually uses a completely different encryption system. It's actually a weird reversed engineered code that he reversed engineered from an alien spacecraft, you know, which uses these weird symbols, and unless you have a translator that translates these encryptions, you're not going to break through.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
I don't think that's an option for us.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, it's sounds pretty cool, you know.
No, I mean, the way you secure it is by using tried and true cryptography, and those options are out there. And it's also using, we've talked about this before, you know, they say, oh, there's hacker tools. These are, well, the only difference between a hacker tool and a tool used for securing a network is who's using it. We need to be able to do things like pen testing to find the vulnerabilities in our network so we can stop them.
And here's another thing, you know, I mean, I understand that no system is 100% unhackable, you know, I mean, because hackers can always find a way, but here's the thing, the more secure a system is, you know, it'll actually also decrease the chances of it hacking, because here's the thing, if there's actually plenty of security systems out there where not only do they alert if the person's being hacked, they can tell, you know, the main HQ where the hacker's coming from.
Oh yeah, good intrusion detection systems, that's what you gotta have.
Yep.
So he also says, quote, we should pursue negotiations with foreign governments who have been known to conduct cyber attacks, as the Obama administration has done to discourage China hacking, but it would be naive to believe that these countries will abide by such agreements unless we are willing to impose meaningful consequences. So I guess we're going to war over this?
That's not how it works, people. If my computer's compromised, do I ask China, wait a minute, China, would you approve of the way I'm doing it? No, I don't give a crap of what China's gonna do. You know, it's my security that's in danger. You know, this, Jed, this isn't about what China or Europe is doing. This is about what's happening in America.
But I mean, there's not one word about the importance of companies doing pen testing, having good intrusion detection systems, using TNO encryption. Not one word about anything like that. Not one word against the back doors that he himself, along with the other presidential candidates, are saying they want to put in so government can have a way in.
Yeah, that's why, in all honesty, I blame government for a lot of the problems with a lot of these private companies, because even if the government had nothing to do with, you know, a certain scandal with a company, the problem is that nowadays companies tend to lead by example, you know, and they tend to follow what the government's doing. And a lot of times what'll happen is that the government isn't doing something about something, or they say it's okay. They conclude, I guess there's no incentive, you know, to work in that specific area. So when it comes up, what can they do?
Yeah, it's a chilling effect. And if they're afraid that government is going to outlaw TNO encryption, they're going to be less likely to implement it or work on those solutions.
That's the reason why a lot of innovation and all that gets stifled. It's not because companies are greedy and don't want to pay the cost. It's because they don't know if their investment's going to be worth it. You know, in fact, it's not unheard of nowadays for some people in the stock exchange to don't sell or invest in anything until we know what the government's going to do.
And I mean, this isn't just a concern for big corporations anymore. We've got the Internet of Things going on. There's like the Ring doorbell, which is this internet-enabled doorbell that gives you all sorts of great things. Like if you're at work and someone comes up to the door, you can see who's there. And if it's UPS, you can tell them, okay, just leave the parcel at the door, stuff like that. But it was found out that there was a fairly major security flaw in there where someone could use a Ring doorbell to get access to your Wi-Fi.
Yep.
So, I mean, we've got smart light bulbs, smart toasters, all sorts of things. The more things like this we get into our homes, that's just going to increase our attack surface. Those things have got to be nailed down.
Yep. We only have three options when it comes to the war on security. We either keep the new technology and don't secure and basically live with the fact that our private information is now out there and that these guys can use it for whatever reason. Two, stop developing and go back, you know, to the 1930s era technology. Three, we keep the technology and we find a way to better secure it so we don't have to worry so much about that threat. Which would you rather be in?
And all of that means that Jeb Bush is this week's biggest bogon emitter. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. And now it's time to multiply by zero this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
So if you're wondering what could be more idiotic than Bernie Sanders' funky math, check out what the Department of Justice has done, and this is direct from their website. And this is about a drug kingpin, 42-year-old Jamal Shakir of Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, he pleaded guilty in U.S. District Court in Nashville to conspiracy and attempting to conduct a continuing criminal enterprise from prison, okay?
And name one drug kingpin that doesn't do that.
To punish him for this, they sentenced him to 20 years in prison. So you did this thing in prison, so we're going to let you stay in the place where you've been doing this from.
Yeah. And again, going back to what we saw earlier, yeah, if a guy runs a website where a few people were using it to issue drug deals and contract killings, he gets life in prison. An actual drug cartel who actually ran a cartel that killed and sold drugs, he gets 25 years.
Well, actually, this is what makes it so dumb. He's already serving 16 consecutive life sentences.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So what's tacking 20 years on the end of that?
Yeah.
Going to do.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of this one cartoon Tailspin where the main character gets captured by this communist-like society and he gets arrested and he tries to break all these rules and they keep saying, hey, for breaking this rule, you add another 20 years to your sentence. And they do this to the point where he has like over 1,000 years on his hands and they keep adding more.
So his punishment is for everything to stay exactly the way it was.
Yeah.
Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah. It's just silly. You know, this is a first time, you know, an idiot extraordinaire is so idiotic that we can't say much on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it speaks for itself as to why the Department of Justice is this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Nobody Here Appreciates a Guy with a Good Imagination edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Come join the discussion at forum.bogosity.tv and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even record it as an audio file if you want. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website or the QR codes on the YouTube video. You can also become a patron at patreon.bogosity.tv and get the podcast and YouTube videos early and without ads or promos. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Chris Hangartner for joining me.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Until next time, here's a quote from Kenneth Boulding. Anyone who believes exponential growth can go on forever in a finite world is either a madman or an economist. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. Bogosity. Want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again.